This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Melissa Moretti.
And Melissa, today I'm excited for this episode. We have, for all those listeners, obviously, and this has been, you know, very public news for so long, is COVID had a real impact on the office market, but also had probably a greater impact on the co-working spaces, which were the WeWorks and the Regises of the world that people may recognize. So today we bring on Kane Wilmont, who's the CEO and co-founder of IQ Offices, which is a national co-working space that is office space both here in Vancouver and across the country, to talk about the co-working space pre-pandemic. We touched all base a little bit on the pandemic, but also what does the future of that look like? Because as we know here in Vancouver, there was quite a few co-working spaces kind of prior to the pandemic. Not all of them made it through the pandemic. We had the big WeWork that never really materialized. But Kane's very bullish and has a great, great outlook on what that is. And he also talks about their client base, which I think for a lot of people might catch them off guard, because their client base seemed to power right through and continue to go in the right direction versus maybe some of the other co-working spaces may not have had that same client base to build from that they seem like they're off and running in 2024 and beyond.
Pretty interesting. Not necessarily what you would have thought.
No, it's a great episode. We're very fortunate to have him on. Isaac said, I'm very interested to hear what his thoughts are on it. I think the listeners will be as well. So without further ado, I know we run a little bit long again, 2 weeks in a row here. Let's get to our interview today with Kane Wilmont, CEO, co-founder, IQ Offices.
All right, let's go.
This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
All right, we're here today with Kane Wilmont, CEO and co-founder of IQ Offices. Kane, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Great, Kane. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I'm excited about this episode and we'll get into all that stuff. But before we dig into that, can you maybe tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you ended up at IQ Offices and your experience in commercial real estate?
Yeah, absolutely. I started in office leasing in 1998, very long time ago, and worked through starting a number of companies. I started three brokerages, a public company, and then ultimately started IQ Offices in 2012 with my business partner that I started a brokerage with in 2009.
Okay.
So we've been running that company. Our first location was in Toronto in 2012, and now we've grown to 8 locations across the country. We have a location at 1055 West Georgia in Vancouver, and we're the largest Canadian-owned co-working operator in Canada.
Amazing. Well, this is why I'm excited here, because obviously, and we're just going to put all the cards on the table here, pre-pandemic, the office market, especially in the city of Vancouver, as probably in most major cities around Canada, was a very, very strong market. And there was things such as WeWork, which everybody knows is probably the famous one, you know, from an international standpoint. And if you also have Apple TV, was kind of the co-working space. A lot of people that didn't understand that industry all knew about it. In Canada here, we had you guys, and there was various brands that also had played with that market. COVID hits, the office market just seems to really dry up, because we didn't know what that looks like. Now we're sitting here 2024, almost into 2025. It's feeling like things are going back together, but I'm extremely interested to hear how have the last couple of years been for the co-working space. Obviously, you guys are bullish. And what are you guys seeing on the forefront within your market space?
Yeah, well, I can speak to Vancouver specifically.
Yeah,
Vancouver,
please do.
Vancouver is one of the best markets in Canada. It was before the pandemic, and it is post-pandemic in terms of vacancy and movement and absorption in the areas that we are in within the city.
Yeah,
which is downtown, right downtown. So the market, you know, in Vancouver had done well through COVID, and I can speak a little bit about COVID. I try not to go too far back then, a little bit of PTSD, but I can talk to how our business model fared during COVID. So when we went into COVID and everything went into lockdown, Vancouver was one of the least lockdown jurisdictions of the four that we're in, being BC, Ontario, and Quebec.
Yep.
So we actually saw the most amount of movement in Vancouver versus any of the markets across Canada. So that was very positive. For us at IQ, we very much focus on a lot of enterprise customers. And that helped us a lot through COVID because we had these large customers that needed to have a presence and needed the office space regardless of whether they were using it throughout that period of time. So I think we did better than a lot of others in the industry because of the quality of our clientele at the time. So I think that was not something that we had thought about going into COVID, obviously.
Yeah, no kidding.
Was going to happen. But certainly that helped. That being said, there was still a tremendous amount of pain. It was a very, very difficult time. As you know, with our business model, we lease spaces for a long term. We do short-term transactions. So when you have something like a pandemic happen, companies can react really quickly.
Yeah.
It's one of the great benefits of being in a co-working space is that you can react quickly and suit your office space to your immediate needs. So every month we would have groups that would be giving us notice, and then we'd be filling up, but we'd be filling up slower than we were getting the notice at the time. So that was COVID. Then coming out of COVID, we had this slingshot effect where we had this huge pipeline of people that were interested in workspace that just hadn't pulled the trigger yet. And because in co-working, you have such short timelines to do the transaction, they could wait. They don't need to think about what do I need? I need to get this office space ready. It's going to take 6 months to a year. So I got to make a decision now. It's literally the next day. You come in, sign an agreement, the next day your whole team can be working in the space. So that delayed the decision, but what it also meant is that everything came in like a fire hose, right? Once everybody came back to the office, it happened almmost all at once and everything just filled up really quickly. And so most of the people in our industry experienced that post-COVID. So there was that slingshot effect where everything just filled up. It went through this period where you had the vacancy, all that vacancy got filled, everything was doing great. And then things started to stabilize a little bit more after that. And what I mean by that is that I think companies started to realize exactly how they were going to use the space. I think there was a number of business leaders that were thinking, we're just going to go back to the 5-day work week, or, you know, COVID's over, now we're going back to what was pre-COVID. And a lot of those decision makers came to the realization that was not the case, that people weren't utilizing the office in the same way. They weren't hiring the same way. Some people were coming back to the office. It was sporadic at times. Some wanted to be in the office all the time, but it became much more complex. The real estate decision-making in terms of workspace became much more complex on the other side of COVID. And so what we've seen now is we saw a flattening. So a slingshot, you know, everybody comes back to the office. Then a bit of a flattening where people were figuring it out. And now what we're seeing is a significant increase in demand. And the reason why is because many companies are looking at their real estate now and deciding to go for a co-working space in place of a traditional lease. So they want to make decisions quickly. They want to have the exact amount of space that they are looking for. And they want to make sure that they're not taking on more space than they need. They want to make sure it's efficient. And ultimately, what I'm hearing from many companies is that pre-COVID, the way that people would view office space is it was simply math. It was, I have 50 employees, take that times 125 square feet per desk or whatever the case may be, and you would just go out and find that space. 12,500 square feet, you know, for the right size, right? And you would go and find that space. Nowadays, what we're hearing from the real estate decision makers is they're looking at workspace and office space more as like an investment. There is the question now of, do we need it? Right, which never really, which didn't exist for many companies prior to COVID. So now we're seeing companies say, if I'm going to make the investment in workspace, I want to make sure I'm getting a return on it. And then what is a return? And so the return is engagement. Like if I just have to boil it down to one word, they want to have highly engaged staff. Everybody wants that, right? There was a Gallup poll survey that said companies with engaged employees realize a 21% increase in profitability. So it's pretty much uncontested that every company wants to have engaged employees, and Workspace is one way to do that. And so when people are looking at their workspace, what they want to determine is, how do I configure? How do I locate? How do I activate? What do I do with that space in order to attract and retain the best talent, right? And have them highly engaged in the goals of this organization. And the other side of COVID is that it's getting more and more difficult for people to do that. First of all, I think that people are looking for more from their office space. They're starting to say, if I'm going to get on the SkyTrain, or I'm going to, you know, sit and wait on the other side of the bridge to get downtown, like, make it worth my while, right? And so because of that, real estate decision makers are starting to look at the risk around making a long-term commitment and then not getting the return in the way of engagement on that space.
It's funny you say that too, because I can echo that kind of from the brokerage community as well, where you do see a lot of people now are looking at office space more like an investment versus maybe necessarily a need right now. And I do think, and I've always been very bullish on this, and I think I've said this on this program quite a few times there, is I think people are creatures of habit. And we're eventually going to always go back, or at least I think we're going to go back to most things that we know. Now, I'm not saying the tenants aren't going to change, but I think it's going to be really challenging for employers to not have people coming in and out of the office, whether that's a lease space or a short-term co-working space or a long-term co-working space for that aspect of it. I think it's really hard for employers to grow companies, create culture, have retention, if there's not some facet of an office component, meeting people and seeing people either daily or on a weekly basis at least.
You know, it's so interesting because obviously you and I are very biased on this, right? And I have definite opinions about it. But I try to look at it objectively.
Yeah.
And if you look at Canada as an example, you know, like 90% of our population lives within 10% of our landmass.
Yeah.
There is a reason why people pay, you know, millions of dollars to own a house and to live in Vancouver. You could drive up into the interior for a few hours and probably get a beautiful place for, you know, $300,000. But people don't want that. They want to be together. People obviously are more happy when they're together. I feel they probably feel more fulfilled when they're together. They feel more connected when they're together, right? Because that's why people congregate and they are in the cities. Now, as an organization, the question is, are they getting that from with working at home in their community, or are they getting that as part of being a part of your organization? That's the question of where they're getting this feeling of connectedness. And I think if you want people to be highly engaged, they have to get that connection from the organization that's supporting them.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. And I think I'm going to say this, and I might butcher this, so if I do, I apologize. I think it was Amazon that I read is mandating that employees come back to the offices now. So if what I think I read is accurate, if the tech industry is doing it, which seemingly would probably, you would think on the surface, would be the easiest industry to work remotely than other industries, if they're now wanting people back in the office, you think a cascading effect over time will happen with other industries now following suit. And I understand at the time, the hybrid model or work from home model, maybe employers were struggling to maintain staff because it was a very strong employee type market at that time, which as the economy feels like it's weakening a little bit, more and more employers seem like they have more people that they can now employ or more employees to potentially pick from when they're doing new hiring, that maybe they're in a better mandating position of here's how we see our organization moving forward, which I think both the office sector and the co-working sector, I think will greatly benefit by that moving forward if that trend kind of continues.
Yeah, I would agree. I think every company's got to make their own decisions on what they want and where they want to see people and how they want to get people to the office. In our business, like our core focus is to attract people to our space and have highly engaged employees and make sure the companies that are making investments in the workspace that we provide are getting a return in the way of engagement on that space. So that's our core focus. And for us, for anyone in the co-working industry, we're judged on this. We are judged on this on a monthly basis, right? Because a significant part of our portfolio could give notice tomorrow. A significant portion that's in month to month or coming up on renewals. You know, we have a large offices. We have an average term of 1 to 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So every single day, we got to prove the value proposition to our customers. And our customers are those people on site. So in our industry, when we look at it, you know, we can't mandate. A prospect comes in and says, I want to rent that office from you. I can't say, well, I'm going to mandate you now to rent this office and get everybody into the space every day. What we do is we partner with those companies to provide experiences that earn the commute. That's really a lot of what we do. So, you know, when I look at these mandates and I hear about the banks and companies struggling with getting people back to the office, one of the things that we look at is, well, maybe part of the equation is what you're asking them to come to, right? Maybe part of the pushback, not all the pushback, but maybe part of it is what's the workspace that you're mandating them to come back to. And that's why we commissioned the survey. And in the survey, we found that 47% of Canadians said that the workspace that they were being asked to come back to is out of touch with what they needed for a work environment. And we commissioned the survey because instead of looking at, you know, like how many people are coming back or what the utilization is or what the occupancy is, I mean, we wanted to start at the customer and work backwards and figure out, okay, well, why is there so much pushback? You know, obviously there's a multitude of reasons, but of course, you know, our interest is in workspace, right?
Yeah.
So is the workspace, are people saying, I love the office, I just don't want to go there because I want to stay home and I want to have flexibility and I want to create my own schedule. I'm not sure that that's the case, right? And that's why we commissioned the survey to really dig in to understand, is it that, or is it that the workspace that they're going to isn't inspiring? Is it the workspace that they're going to doesn't have the energy that they're looking for? Part of that survey said that 76% indicated that they could be enticed to go back to the office. And we broke it down on like, what's the level of importance? Like, what is important to you in coming back to the office? And number one was well-designed working environment. Number two was perks like free snacks and beverages. The third was a central location. And then the fourth was convenient amenities. So I think, you know, most of those things are fairly intuitive in terms of what people would want going back to the office. And I think as the companies that are looking at doing those mandates or the companies that are not doing the mandates, but are looking at what do I need to do to get people back to the office, if that's the priority, they can look to this to start checking off the boxes and saying, you know, what is it that you need? What is it that I can do to create this environment and foster collaboration and provide you know, focus space and make it so that when you come to the office, you feel like that was a good use of your time?
Well, I think it's sort of amongst maybe just people within the industry, at least on the office side of things over out here in Vancouver, is a lot of people have always felt the office market, I think, will eventually come back. We're not a head office city. There's not a ton of office space. There was a really, really unfortunate COVID situation. A huge amount of product was getting delivered at the wrong time that obviously wasn't getting absorbed. And that definitely impacted kind of vacancy numbers. But I think a lot of people have always felt like the new office would be like a flight to quality type of thing, that you got to have unique offerings or more things to offer to have people want to come back. So it's funny that you touch on that as well. That's one thing sort of in the, you know, over here, it's been sort of spoken about that if for the new office buildings, like these are not new office buildings, but just office buildings, period, there has to maybe be end of trip facilities and all of these new things now that would probably hopefully entice more people, tenants, employers, and employees to occupy these buildings moving forward. So I think we're on the same page there. One thing you actually said there that I thought was really interesting, maybe you can elaborate a little bit more for our listeners, is like the enterprise clients. Because I think a lot of people think that these co-working spaces is maybe a one or two person operation that they worked from home and they're going to go into the office every now and then, or they want a private office. But talk to us more about like the enterprise clients, because that seems like a very unique strategy that obviously worked well for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I can even talk to the trend on that. So when we built our first location in Toronto, we built what we consider to be the best quality space in the market. We went down to Soho, to New York, and saw WeWork's second location. It was 200,000 square feet, brick and beam, gorgeous building. Loved everything they were doing, because at the time, co-working was really like executive suites with drop ceilings and carpet and not very inspiring. And then we saw WeWork and we're like, this is amazing. What we didn't like about it was that the lack of privacy around the space and really the target market. You know, WeWork at the time was typecast for really the startup community. And that's not what we were going after as a customer. So we built this space that was very well, like highly designed. We focused on privacy elements. We put security in place and we put, you know, private VLANs for all of our internet. And we made the nicest space we could possibly make. And we put ourselves in it so that we could enjoy that space. And what we expected was we were going to get like high-end entrepreneurs, like basically entrepreneurs that had maybe are onto their second location. They're well-funded. They want the best space in the city. That's what we thought we were going to get. What we found we got was actually large organizations and usually their satellite offices for large international organizations, because that ended up being the customer that could really draw a straight line from their investment in the employees and their investment in the workspace. They were putting people into our space that had very high salaries, as an example, right? So they weren't looking to save $200 a desk when they were coming to Toronto. What they wanted was they wanted the best possible space in the market. And that's what we've delivered across the board. And we feel that's what we've delivered in Vancouver as well. And as a result, our portfolio has always been a lot of enterprise companies, larger organizations. For confidentiality reasons, I can't mention them, but
yeah, absolutely.
Technology, trillion-dollar technology companies. We have banks, we have accounting firms, you know, we have universities, we have large organizations within our spaces. And what we found post-COVID, this is really interesting. What we found post-COVID, landlords started to build out show suites. So this is kind of, show suites is not a new thing. It's a concept. I started an office leasing. Some of my first listings, I remember talking to landlords and saying, you just got to build it out. And then we could lease this space. And, you know, landlords at the time would say, well, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to build out this space. And then they're going to come in and say, I don't like it. And they're going to rip out all these improvements I just spent all this money for. And then it would be used at the time to basically lease up that space. They'd maybe make some of those improvements, but ultimately they get a 5 to 10 year deal. Today, what we're seeing is that companies don't want to make long-term commitments because they've already been burnt by COVID. On top of the fact that they just don't have any sight lines into how they're going to use the workspace for a long period of time. So landlords are having to build out spaces. You know, in markets like Vancouver, you know, we're seeing show suites of 10,000 square feet, very large show suites. So what's interesting is with these show suites, we've seen some of the small to medium-sized businesses in our portfolio going to show suites, mostly because they think they're cheap, because they look at the monthly spend on the show suite and it's only rent. Of course, you don't have all the things layered on that we have layered on to our spaces, and they end up going to that space. Those same spaces are now getting backfilled by large multinational corporations because they are all coming off the sidelines now. And if you talk to any Fortune 500 company, ask them if they have a flex strategy within their real estate portfolio. And what we're seeing is 10 out of 10 do some sort of strategy around their flex space. So we're seeing those spaces getting backfilled. And for those companies, they're doing the math and they see the tremendous benefit of going into a space that they don't have to manage and activate.
Interesting. We've talked about, we're both kind of bullish that we think things are going to move in the right direction. What does the future of co-working space look like? Like, how does IQ offices expand their operation? How do they pour fuel on the fire type of thing as the office market seems like it's coming back?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So there's a bit of a challenge with regards to that. What we're seeing in the market, in many other markets, I'm going to London next month. For Juicy London, which is a conference for co-working spaces.
Okay.
And in London, 10% of the office inventory, and think about how much inventory there is in London, 10% of the inventory in that market is co-working. So you're seeing this tremendous amount of space in that market that's servicing the international community. What we're seeing is the majority of those transactions are now being done on a management deal basis, meaning that the co-working operator is working with a landlord under a management structure for them to manage the space. And then there's essentially like a waterfall and a profit share. And ultimately, it's a fee for service. And that's how co-working spaces are growing in markets like London. In markets like Canada, it's much more slower to adopt. First of all, we're about 2% of inventory across Canada in the major markets, as opposed to 10%, right?
Yeah.
So there just isn't the level of adoption in the Canadian markets that you're seeing abroad. In addition to that, landlords are just not interested. Landlords are looking to do long-term leases if they can, obviously with covenants, and they prefer that. And so does their bank over doing a management deal with a co-working space. Because of that, I think you're going to continue to see a restriction of supply in the market, and you know I don't think you're going to see tremendous growth on that basis. Co-working spaces are going to grow, but I think in a measured way. Because I think from the landlord's perspective, given the choice, they would take a bank for 10 years over, you know, taking us on as a manager for the space. And, you know, I think the building would do better having us there for a multitude of reasons, but I also understand because we own buildings too, that, you know, I understand the, you know, the intentions behind wanting to do just a long-term lease in the space. So you're going to see growth in the market, but I think it's slow and I think it's going to be tempered. I think co-working is going to be very healthy for quite a long time because of that, because it also takes a long time to build these spaces and then deliver them to the market. And when you have these partnerships with the landlord, these things can really take off. I do think in the fullness of time that you're going to see more and more landlords introducing co-working into the portfolio because it's such a great opportunity to activate the space with a company whose core business is, you know, attracting people to the space, right?
Yeah.
That's our core business. And so we are a B2C company. If you look at a landlord is a B2B company primarily, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm talking in broad terms,
yeah.
But essentially it's a transaction between the company and the landlord, right? Whereas ours, yes, we sign a license agreement, which is a transaction between the company and IQ, but the delivery of service every day is a B2C delivery of service. We deal with every single person on site. Everyone can come to the front desk and we take care of every single person. We onboard every single person at IQ. We offboard every single person at IQ, right? We take care of all of their setup. We make sure that every single day is a fantastic day and they have a great experience in the workspace. And that's something that we do every day. And I think that ultimately, if you look at thinking about future-proofing a building, if you offer this kind of service, I think you're gonna have a significant competitive advantage over just doing a long-term lease. And I'm not saying like the entire building needs to be this. Like we're opening a new location in December, 60,000 square feet in Toronto. So obviously we're very bullish in the market.
Yeah.
But in this building, it's entirely co-working. The entire building from the ground floor right up to the rooftop deck is entirely co-working. So, but I don't think that necessarily every building needs to be that. I do think every large building in Vancouver should have some sort of co-working space that allows tenants, when they go into the building, to say, like, I could take 5,000 square feet or I could do 4,000 square feet. I'd be much more comfortable. I'll take it for a longer term because I could leverage the co-working space because I don't need to have a big boardroom, right? I can go down to the lounge. That's going to be activated. I can bring my employees there when I need to. If I have some people coming in from out of town, six people for a week, I can rent an office for a week.
Yeah.
Make that happen. I don't have to think about leasing more space for all these things.
One question I have for you here, I know we're getting to our stop time here pretty soon, but one question I have, like obviously you've talked about like kind of the areas that you're currently located in, downtown Vancouver being one of them. Do you foresee yourself expanding outside of the downtown office market in BC? Like do you eventually see yourself maybe in like a Fraser Valley market or even a Vancouver Island market?
You know, I wouldn't rule anything out. What I will say is that most of our customers are the enterprise customers. A lot of our customers are multi-market.
Yep.
And what we find is where they want to be is the downtown core. It's also what we know. We know the downtown core. We know the customer that goes to that area. We know that our customer wants us to be in those areas. And I also think there's still significant opportunity for us to grow within the downtown core of Vancouver, which we definitely want to do. So we always look at opportunity. We're opportunistic. So, you know, we're entrepreneurial guys. We'll always look at different opportunities as they come our way. But our real focus is to be in the downtown core.
Well, Kane, amazing. We appreciate you taking the time to kind of unravel the co-working space and what the future of the co-working space is. But before we let you go, we have a lighthearted six-pack of questions we ask all of our guests. We get to know you a little bit more outside of the office. Do you have a few more minutes for us?
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you so much. And Melissa, lead us off. The six-pack is powered by our good friends over at Redpoint Law.
Redpoint Law, Corey, Tim, Falco, Scott, and the team. These are great people with a wealth of experience when it comes to commercial closings and private lending. And I just want to say, Corey, not to cut you off, they have a perfect 5-star review on Google.
So for all your commercial legal needs, visit them at redpointlaw.ca with offices in Vancouver and now open in downtown Kelowna.
All right. Favorite vacation spot?
Oh, favorite vacation spot. That's an interesting one. I have so many. Cocoa Beach would be it.
Cocoa
Beach. It's in Florida. It's close to Orlando.
Nice.
It's the birthplace of Kelly Slater. So we like to go down there as a family and surf. So that's definitely one of my favorite spots.
Amazing. Next question up here. A book recommendation for all of our listeners doesn't necessarily have to be real estate related, but it can be.
I've got a great one, and it's not real estate related. It's Shoe Dog with Phil Knight. It is the story of Nike.
Yeah.
It is It's the best book I've ever read. I recommend it to everyone.
It's a great book. And then now just correct me if I'm wrong, because I've listened to the book and I've also seen the movie Air. Is the movie Air the adaption, semi kind of quasi adaption of the book?
I think so. Like, yeah. I think that's the idea. When I watched the movie, it was good.
Yeah.
But I feel like it picked up about 10%.
Yeah, no, I think I got the Shoe Dog, like the audio book, I think way when it first came out. And one thing that I was really surprised with, and I'm not giving away anything here, people may or may not already know, is the waffle maker. How they made some of the shoes, the bottom of the shoes was designed from like a waffle maker. They'd poured rubber into a waffle maker or something like that to create that pattern at the bottom of the Nike shoes early days. Which when you look at it, now it makes sense. But that time was probably very innovative.
There's so many things that he did that was innovative. I'm even thinking about, you know, at the time when he started that company, going over to Japan. Just getting to Japan. Never mind trying to figure things out when you're everything was landlined. And, they just didn't have the technology. The thing that book that really resonated with me that I'll never forget is he said, so he goes through the whole thing, you know, and ultimately at the end of the book, he's taken Nike public. He's a billionaire. You know, he's made it, right?
Yeah.
And obviously the book's all about like his struggle. He struggled a lot.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
But he said when he was at the end, even with all the struggle, almost going bankrupt, not being able to make payroll, all the things that he had happened to him, he said, I will give every dime I have to go back and do it again.
Yeah.
And it makes me, you know, when you have, you know, COVID, right?
Yeah.
When you think about COVID and you think about how bad COVID was for so many people in our industry, right? Those are the kind of words that I would go back to and think about and think, you know, as hard as this is, there is a day in my life where I will probably look back at this and say, I would love to do that again. So I'm going to try and just live in it. And I'm going to try and, you know, be the best part of me to get through it.
Yeah. Great recommendation.
All right. Next question. Favorite band or musician?
Oh, okay. I have to say Tragically Hip. It just seems like a Canadian thing to say, you know?
That's I don't think we've ever had the Tragically Hip in the years we've done this, but that's a great one.
Really? Oh, I love Tragically Hip.
Next question up. Unfortunately, Kane, you've done something horribly wrong. You found yourself on death row, but you're given one more meal before it's all said and done. What meal are you having?
I have to think it's steak and lobster. It's just something you just don't have all the time. So that seems like that'd be it.
Great choice.
All right. You are drunk at a bar. You're handed a karaoke mic. What song are you singing?
Oh, that's good. Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting.
Oh, good. Good one. Good one. And last question up, and I'm just making the assumption based on the area code we're calling you from here. You got to be a Leafs fan.
Yeah. I mean, I try to be. I'm a bandwagon fan at best. I don't follow a ton of sports. But when the Leafs, you know, get into the playoffs, which only happens every few years, I get all excited and then I get disappointed.
Okay,
you know, that's I've done that a few times.
So our last question for you is here, and we're customizing it for you. Is this the year the Leafs will break the curse and win the Stanley Cup?
I mean, I have to say yes, right? I mean, I've been saying yes for all my life, and yet they haven't won a Stanley Cup in my lifetime.
This could be the year.
Saying yes.
This could be the year. Well, from a Canadian standpoint, hopefully Vancouver can kind of repeat what we did last year, which I think caught a lot of people off guard. Edmonton went all the way to the Stanley Cup final, and Leafs, you know, as much as we probably hate to say it out here out West, have always had a very competitive team, and they probably deserve to go on farther than they actually have in recent years. So between those three Canadian markets, we actually might have a fighting chance at trying to get the cup back north of the 49th parallel this year. We'll see what happens. Kane, for all of our listeners, I want to find out more about yourself and the IQ offices and where you guys are located and how they can get involved. How can they find out more about you?
Yeah, well, if you want to see IQ, if you're in Vancouver, we're on the 24th floor of 1055 West Georgia. Anyone can stop by anytime. Like anyone from your shop or another shop, or if it's a customer or it's a developer, landlord. If you want to see what we do, our spaces are highly staffed. Just walk in the front door, say you were listening to the podcast, say you'd like a tour and understand what it is that we do. We are more than happy to do that. If you want to reach out to me, I'm on LinkedIn. So just look up my name on LinkedIn and I'd be happy to connect.
That sounds great. Well, Kane, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Thanks, Kane. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, my pleasure. Bye-bye.
There you have it, folks. Our interview today with Kane Wilmont, CEO and co-founder of IQ Offices. I thought that was an outstanding episode.
Very good conversation with Kane.
And one thing I will say, and then when we're talking on there and we're going through the six pack, I don't think we've had anybody to date in the years that we've done this now pick the tragically hip.
That's tragic.
I know. It's like kind of like the tragically hip were kind of like the Canadian band before Nickelback became the Canadian band.
Okay.
And now Nickelback's progressed to the world's band.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and biggest, the tragically hip is still tragically Canadian.
Yeah. I think one thing too, like I love the tragically hip. I think they struggled, I think, to break into the kind of the American markets and stuff like that. Maybe because they were branded too Canadian. I don't know. I'm making an assumption here.
Okay.
With it, but they're outstanding. I'm really surprised we haven't had someone else pick the tragically hip so far.
Are you?
I am there. And then also the book Shoe Dog, which is a tremendous book all about the Phil Knight story and Nike. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've had anyone pick Shoe Dog yet.
I've heard a lot about that book.
It's a great book. And then you have the Amazon movie Air, which is kind of like the quasi-adaption of the book to tell the story. And he goes deep into like the Michael Jordan era and how that really changed Nike. And I'm just really surprised we hadn't had that.
Yeah. Well, Kane knows what's going on.
Yeah. He's a good guy. And I guess to leave us on a final thought, and I guess depending on what you read or who you talk to, our neighbors down south dropped 50 basis points this week. And I think from a majority of things I read, I think I'm going to say surprising, where I think everyone knew 25 basis points was coming.
Yeah.
Some people maybe were optimistically thinking 50. So I think when they actually did the 50 basis points, I'm going to say surprising, but I could be wrong. Obviously, I'm not an economist or I don't follow the American numbers nearly as much as I do up here. But it seems like it maybe was a surprising move to get 50 basis points, which I think opens the door for Canada.
Yeah.
That we can even go down maybe a little more aggressively than we already have, because we got to somewhat keep American interest rates in mind because of obviously our dollar. And if we drop maybe too fast, our economy looks weaker. That could impact our dollar, international trade. So yeah, I think that's a good sign. Now, the economy's got to hold itself together here, obviously. But if it can continue to do that, hopefully, and move in the right direction and not bottom,
could be good
then
news.
These interest rates are going to keep going the right direction. And recently, I saw an interest rate for a client on a five-year fixed sub 5%.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it was 4.85 or something like that. So that's a great sign that we're now seeing that in our commercial market, which these numbers now make it a little more palatable, which will have dramatic impact on your loan-to-value side of things, which that's an episode we should do. Loan-to-value. That's the question we get asked probably more than anything, I feel like, when people are buying property. Is the loan-to-value side of it, that will open up a little more doors there to make it maybe a little more palatable for investors now to get back in, even owner-occupiers that are trying to get financing. So all in all, I think it's very bullish moving forward.
Yeah.
For all those people who are interested in doing commercial real estate or have any questions, they're welcome to reach out to me anytime. They can reach out to me by email, corey@williamwright.ca. They can visit our website, williamwright.ca, and sign up for the latest and greatest news. Or you can always call our head office in Vancouver, 604-428-5255. Let us know what you're looking for, and we're happy to put you in touch with any of the agents throughout the province. And for those who want to buy and sell houses in this crazy low interest rate market we're talking about, how can they get a hold of you, Melissa?
Yeah, you can call me 778-869-4477 or email me at melissa@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Outstanding. And we'll be back next week, guys, with another new episode. Thanks for listening.
All right. Have a good week.
Take care.
Subscribe today.